Hi everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It's Friday morning, which means it's time for the weekend review and preview conversation, where my guests will recap how markets have performed over the past few sessions and preview what you can expect in the week ahead. Today's conversation will primarily focus on market volatility, as well as how investors should navigate these conditions. Joining us for the update, I'm glad to welcome back Matthew Tormey with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Matt, welcome. We're happy to have you.
Hey, good morning, Siobhan, and thanks for having me.
Perfect. So let's get started. Following last Friday's volatile session, similar conditions persisted this week across global markets. To what extent have U.S. equities been impacted?
Yes. So since last Friday's jobs report, global markets have been particularly volatile. And just to add a few numbers for context, as of this morning in the U.S., the S&P 500 is now 6% off its all-time high that it saw in mid-July. On Monday, the index fell by 3% and rallied 2.3% yesterday. Tech stocks are down nearly 3%, and the Mag 7 are down more than 4% over the last week. And if I look at the VIX volatility index, it shot up to over 65 intraday on Monday, which was a post-pandemic peak. Outside of the U.S., a lot of focus has been on Japan, too, with their equity market falling more than 12% on Monday and rallying by 10% on Tuesday. So a lot of volatility in global markets in general. So the next natural question is, what has been driving all this volatility in markets? And we think that there are a couple of factors. First, the yen carry trade has been in headlines recently following the Bank of Japan's decision at the end of July to raise rates to the surprise of some investors and fears of a U.S. recession that became heightened following last Friday's jobs report could lead to rapid rate cuts from the Fed. Essentially, at a basic level, the yen carry trade involves borrowing at near zero interest rates in the Japanese currency and putting the proceeds into higher return markets. So if investors are forced to rapidly close such trades, the impact can be felt in a range of markets around the world. And it appears that such a forced unwind has indeed taken place over the past week. And second, last Friday's jobs report was much weaker than expected as payroll growth slowed and the tick up in the unemployment rate triggered the SOM rule, which is a way of thinking about when a recession may be underway. So while we acknowledge that the data has been a bit softer recently, we think that a recession is still unlikely. So in our view, the Fed isn't behind the rate cutting curve, as we do expect the Fed to cut rates by 100 basis points this year. And Fed Chair Powell made it clear last week that the Fed has plenty of scope to cut interest rates if economic growth cools too quickly. Within the labor market report, it was also encouraging to see that some of the more cyclical industries, such as construction, were still growing. And just this past week, initial jobless claims fell and came in below expectations, which helped alleviate concerns that the job market was materially weakening.
So how should equity investors navigate through these volatile conditions, and what are CIO's current equity preferences?
Yeah, this is a great question, Siobhan, because volatility can present opportunity, which we believe is the case today. So given our view that the U.S. economy is still heading for a soft landing, we would advise investors to maintain their current allocation to equities because we do believe the backdrop remains supportive due to healthy earnings growth, improving inflation, Fed rate cuts that are looming, and AI investment. And given this view, along with our expectation that the Fed will cut rates in September, in prior Fed cutting cycles in non-recessionary episodes, the S&P 500 on average has risen 17% following the first Fed rate cut. And back on your point around volatility, if we look at the VIX index, yesterday the index closed just above 23. And since 1990, the forward returns for the S&P 500 over the next 3, 6, and 12 months were quite attractive when the VIX was at or above this level. So another good reason to stay invested. And on positioning, we continue to reiterate the theme that we've had all year, which is for investors to focus on quality stocks. So within our sector preferences, we continue to like the tech sector due to the fact that it's the highest return on invested capital across all sectors. And we think that investors will likely continue to gravitate to high quality companies that have good secular growth. Also, AI infrastructure spending remains robust, and key semiconductor components needed for AI will likely remain supply constrained into next year, and the sector should benefit from a bottoming in PC and smartphone end markets. Additionally, we do like the industrial sector as it should benefit from resilient economic growth, and we believe the defense segment should benefit from the current geopolitical environment. And on size, we do think that small cap valuations are compelling, which does suggest that longer term returns could be quite attractive, but profit trends are lagging other size cohorts, which keeps us more neutral in the near term.
So checking in on the quarter two corporate reporting earnings season, what are your thoughts on reporting relative to what expectations were at the start?
So what a past week has been for equity markets, and it's certainly shifted some attention away from the earnings season, but the results are still very important for the overall outlook. So as of this morning, we've heard from 85% of the S&P 500 market cap, and 56% of companies are beating sales estimates, while 75% are beating EPS estimates, both figures essentially in line with their historical averages. In aggregate, earnings are beating by 2.5%, which is right in line with our initial expectations at the start of the earnings season. And corporate profits are on track to grow by 11 to 12%, which is, again, in line with our initial expectations. On guidance, the third quarter earnings revisions have been fine, and in fact, the pace of the revisions is in line with normal seasonal patterns. However, this has been taken as a bit of incremental softening, given the forward revisions during the prior earnings season were better than normal. Now, just to highlight some of the key takeaways from the second quarter earnings season, a lot of companies have been highlighting that consumer spending appears to be stable, but there continue to be signs of softness on the lower end. Results from the Magnificent Seven are nearly complete. And although the results were somewhat mixed, we didn't hear anything that was of a significant concern, as many of these companies still have compelling growth opportunities ahead of them. And finally, concerns about the returns on AI investment, which we believe are premature as management teams remain very enthusiastic about the technology's potential, even if it may take some time for the payoff to become clear. And just to provide some further color here, there continue to be plenty of indications that demand continues to exceed supply for AI infrastructure, suggesting continued growth in AI-related capital expenditures, which was a trend confirmed by all major cloud service providers. So bottom line, the second quarter earnings season results may have been a touch softer than last quarter's, but the results are coming in line with our expectations, and we don't see anything significant enough to change our outlook for 11% S&P 500 earnings growth this year and 8% growth in 2025.
So we are coming to the end of our conversation, Matt, and I want to turn to next week. What is taking place that investors should be mindful of?
Yeah, so next week will be very important given there's going to be plenty of economic data points to scrub through amid questions about the state of the economy. So looking ahead to next week, on Tuesday, we'll receive the latest reading for the NFIB Small Business Index, which will give us some good insights on the health of small businesses throughout the country. Additionally, we'll receive the July PPI inflation reading, which remains important despite the increased focus towards the labor market. On Wednesday, keeping with the inflation theme, the July CPI inflation report is set to come out, with expectations calling for a flattish year-over-year rate relative to the prior month, while the monthly headline and core readings are expected to see a slight uptick. Turning to Thursday, we'll receive a flood of data, including the weekly initial jobless claims numbers, which provided us with a nice down surprise this week. Two regional Fed manufacturing index readings for August. So this will be the Empire State Index and the Philadelphia Fed Index. Retail sales for July will be especially important given concerns about a slowdown in consumer spending. Industrial and manufacturing production for July also set to hit the tape. And to round out the day, a timely read on single-family housing with the August NAHB Housing Market Index, which is expected to see a slight uptick from the prior month. And rounding out the week, on Friday, more on housing with July housing starts and building permits readings, as well as the preliminary Michigan consumer sentiment reading for August, which is expected to see a slight improvement. And for the earnings schedule for next week, although we are in the later innings of the results season, a lot of focus is coming up on retail. So we'll hear from companies such as Home Depot and Walmart. And outside of retail land, we'll hear from companies such as Cisco, Applied Materials, and Deere.
Okay, perfect, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Siobhan, and have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.